Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
He's Bill Ryder, and he's writer than you.
The program writer than you. Sometimes.
He's a fan.
I love sports so much.
He's in your face.
I will destroy those obnoxiously arrogant, clueless, tone-deaf superstars who are marginal players, good players, made careers, who believe they're Hall of Famers.
He's nice.
We're nice here, I promise.
He's humble.
I think I'm usually pretty good here on the show about admitting when I got it wrong.
Live from Los Angeles, here's Bill Ryder.
Good morning and welcome into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Thank you for being here. As we always are, we are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. And you can reach us. We'd love to hear from you. Couple ways. Phone number, 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4CBS if you want to give us a holler. You can also hit us up on Twitter. I'm on there at SportsRider Sports, and my last name, R-E-I-T-E-R. Executive producer, Thomas DiBenedetto. Producer underscore Tom. 50 Shades of Andrew Bogish. Not as many characters as Shades. Just at Andrew Bogish. Two excellent follows. Something later in the show will hit. Something in Paris that happened today points a spotlight on several of our all-time great athletes and why we need to enjoy their excellence while we can. I've said to you again and again that I was excited about and interested in Major League Baseball's new format for the playoffs, which sounds like it will be the format going forward, a best-of-three series for every team to open up the postseason. But we hadn't tried it on yet, hadn't actually experienced what it feels like for several teams, the Twins, the A's, the Indians, the Blue Jays, to play this even shortened season and to now find that season on the brink after a single postseason game. We'll dive into that in an hour, and I think we'll do, in large part, tell it through the prism of a Dodgers team that is both clearly the best in baseball and has massive amounts of pressure on every shoulder that'll be wearing Dodgers blue tonight against the Brewers. Buy or sell, we hit a bunch of topics, and I'm sure we'll talk a lot of NBA finals and clearly some NFL. But I want to start here. The NBA finals begin tonight. And we have a showdown, as we talked a little bit about earlier in the week. And I wrote a column for over at CBSSports.com that'll be up at some point today, that the real rivalry is Riley versus LeBron. And that speaks, it personifies really a Heat organization deserted from their own view, right? You can make your own decisions about who was the bad guy here. What's the old trick for comic books and movies? The best enemies, the stories of the best rivalries are those who begin as best friends. You can choose if LeBron is Lex Luthor or Superman and which one Pat Riley is. But there's a level of dislike between that organization and the star that's going to play itself out. That's going to have an impact. Pat Riley shaped LeBron James as much as LeBron James shaped Pat Riley. LeBron's ability to do in the playoffs what he has done, going back to his final three finals runs with the Heat, going back to his finals after finals after finals appearance with the Cavs, including that one win over the Warriors, and this run of the finals, those are things he learned from Pat Riley and the Miami Heat. And I don't have to guess at that. I don't have to speculate. You don't have to wonder if I got that one right here on the show, Ryder Than You with Bill Ryder. Thanks for listening here on CBS Sports Radio. LeBron's told us in the past. I think the analogy, I think the comparison, the illustration he drew for us was it was like going and getting a master's degree, a PhD in basketball from Miami. Never got to go to college. He's too talented as a basketball player when you could come straight out of high school. That was his education. And so everything you're seeing, Riley helped to craft. But on the flip side, Pat Riley wasn't exactly Mr. Draft expert. Dwayne Wade, yes, but that's it. And he's been with the Heat for 20 years now, until this draft class. Tyler Hero, 13th overall pick in this past draft. Bam Adebayo, 14th overall pick in the draft before that. Certainly selling Jimmy Butler. But this Heat team is a personification of Pat Riley. Eric Spoelstra, and I think you'd agree, I'd agree. The notion Eric Spoelstra is the most underrated coach, excuse me, in the NBA has been put aside. We know how great he is now. We've seen it. That's a guy raised up by Pat Riley from the video room. Nurtured, a protege. He's an extension of Riley on the floor. Just like a name you probably haven't heard a lot, Andy Ellsberg, the general manager there, the guy that's technically the GM who drafted Hero and Adebayo and helped with all these things, was an intern at one point in the 80s or 90s for the Heat. Pat Riley inherited that guy as a fairly low-level basketball ops guy when Riley took over when he came from the Knicks. And Ellsberg became one of the top cap specialists in the NBA. One of the reasons that the Big Three could happen was this guy you probably never heard of. And now he's a GM. Again, he's an extension of Riley in the front office. This is Riley's team. It's its culture. Everything about it is because of Riley. But the refocus on greatness. Some would say Riley dusting off the cobwebs a little bit on his own rust, on his own approach, comes because LeBron broke the heart of everybody in Miami. But that's not how Riley reacts. It just pissed him off. This series is going to be about all of those things. So don't believe LeBron James here when he tells you, it's hard not to roll my eyes when he says stuff like this, that this finals showdown against the Heat is just like any other.
It's no extra meaning to winning a championship, no matter who you're playing against. It's already hard enough to even reach the finals, to be in this position. So if you're able to become victorious out of the finals, it doesn't matter who it's against. I'm just happy that I'm here with the opportunity.
Oh, my bad. You're just happy you're there. Doesn't matter. No big deal that the place that used to praise you loathes your name now. That the sports talk radio stations that used to defend you, and let this delicious irony sink in, from people like me now love me because they think we don't get along, even though we do. That Pat Riley's ill-advised postseason, post-LeBron press conference, if you got the guts, didn't insult the hell out of you, and you didn't tell everybody in the NBA that was the case. I would sit here and try to make a very compelling argument to you why LeBron's full of total crap there. You know, I might point to the fact that, I'll just use me as an example. Someone who was hated is an understatement. Hated in Miami. Hated by my fellow media members. I would argue for writing the truth when they were all sycophants looking to defer to Riley and LeBron. And to be fair, there's a lot of pressure to write positively about LeBron when you cover him. And there's a lot of pressure to write positively about Pat Riley when you're on his teams. In combination, that overwhelms a lot of people. I just like being difficult, I suppose. So that is an argument I would make. Might point out that the same people, media, radio hosts there, maybe some Heat sources who did not like me, now think I'm their best friend when I come to Miami. That occasionally people that pulled me aside and told me I was a liar and full of crap about LeBron, now look at me and say, you were right all along. Here's some more dirt. I would try to bring those things up, but I'm just going to let Anthony Davis, who was also doing NBA Finals stuff, give the game away. AD, as you'll hear here, did not get the memo. We're supposed to pretend that he aren't a big deal for LeBron.
Obviously, when he plays against his former teams, you know, he wants to win very bad. Very badly, just like anyone else would. And, you know, to be back in the finals against Miami, I think means a lot more to him, you know, winning this one than anyone else. And I think this championship is probably second behind Cleveland if we're able to get this one for him.
I love it. There it is. There's the answer. The Brown may be unreliable when it comes to postseason basketball games. We're going to find out which version of him shows up. It'll go a long way to who wins the series, but he still hasn't gotten the memo. You're not supposed to be honest about LeBron. That's LeBron's role if he chooses to do it. Love it. Anthony Davis, thank you. You're my MVP. You're my media most valuable player. I like guys that are honest, especially when it's accidental. And by the way, you better believe AD gets a talking to from, or just like, hey man, no, you know, don't do that. Don't do that. One of the things about LeBron that first year in Miami, and again, I was there. I was a columnist. I was accurately vicious toward LeBron James every day for whatever it was, 10 months, right, about that guy. I won't pretend I'm not a part of this. Probably a part of it. I think it was the truth. But the animosity LeBron felt, the hatred he felt, the dislike he felt at every arena, from every fan, from most media members outside of the cocoon of sycophancy that was South Florida, and from other players and other organizations was real. I tell this story a lot, but just to illustrate it, when LeBron went back to Cleveland for that first game as a member of the Miami Heat, a guy named Joe Goodman and I, excellent, excellent writer, he's now a columnist in Alabama, we're in an elevator. And home arenas provide security, right? They have law enforcement officials they hire to provide security for athletes. And there was extra security with LeBron going back to Cleveland that day. And they have a code name, right? You'll hear, if you're near a walkie-talkie, you'll hear the Jayhawk is moving toward, you know, if he's from Kansas, moving to the floor. Or, you know, Star 3 is heading to get some lunch. I'm in the elevator, and you're not supposed to miss tip-off for a game when you're a writer. But I did. I was down getting coffee or something. So, like, the game was starting, and we get in an elevator, Joe and I, and there's a woman who has a walkie-talkie, right? And the elevator's empty except for this woman, an 855-2124-CBS. Just to illustrate how much LeBron was hated. And you hear the walkie-talkie crackle, and then you hear a voice go, he's leaving the locker room. The enemy is leaving the locker room again. The enemy is heading to the floor. The people guarding LeBron James at the place he had played had labeled him, as part of their duties to protect him, the enemy. And it spoke to how hated he was. And what we know now, LeBron tried to embrace it. I was there. I don't mind being the bad guy. I'm going to be the bad guy. He couldn't do it. For all of his strengths, we all have strengths and we all have weaknesses. He had to be liked, loved, or at least respected. And there was so much animosity. It was so, the loathing was so real from Cleveland and beyond that it affected LeBron. I don't know what that looks like now for LeBron James because he hasn't been hated like that since that year. Are there people that find him a little annoying, difficult? Yeah, the guy's he's a complicated guy. I mean, LeBron James is maybe the biggest paradox I've ever met. Remarkably empathetic in private. Incredibly kind to children and strangers, but weirdly callous in a locker room with people he's around all day long. He soaks up basketball knowledge and wants to learn from the best, but is overwhelmingly jealous of his view of how things should be. I mean, I could go on all day. And one of them, too, is he needs to be loved. He does things that can make him hated, sometimes just beating your team, and he can't handle it. You're going to have a microcosm in this series. And he's lucky that it's in a bubble because it won't actually physically be in Miami, which is interesting. LeBron is loathed by that Heat organization. Anyone who tells you anything else is just not telling the truth. And you can see it. I'll pick on Dan Le Batard, but you can pick on anybody. I mean, Dan Le Batard once left me a crazy, angry voicemail. No, I'm sorry. Went after me on Twitter aggressively for tweeting something pretty innocuous and then left me a very, very kind, apologetic text message as a result. And Dan's a good guy, and he's the most talented writer I think that's ever done sports writing in my era, along with Rick Riley. But the reason Dan didn't like me is I was critical of LeBron. And all the things I said about LeBron that first year, he says now, and the South Florida media follows suit. The point is, the love-hate for him with the Heat is a real thing. And it's going to play itself out. It's going to impact this series. And so is the fact, look, Eric Spoelstra's a good guy and a great coach. And he likes LeBron. I mean, I was around Eric Spoelstra. He likes LeBron. But LeBron was not easy to manage. LeBron tried to get Spoelstra fired 9 games into that season. So Eric Spoelstra would already be motivated, of course, to try to scheme against LeBron, right? To try to figure out a way to slow him down. And it's easier said than done, but if you can slow LeBron down, if you can make it be Anthony Davis who beats your team, you have a chance. Because AD, I don't know. You don't know. Can he win 4 games? I don't think he can. Now, do I think he can shut LeBron down for 4 games? I don't. But if anybody can, tactically, and maybe more to the point psychologically, if anyone understands the pressure points of LeBron James, the weaknesses, the things to hit, the ways to flummox him, it's the only coach that's ever survived having coached LeBron James. Think about that. Think about all the all-time greats. Kobe Bryant didn't run through coaches. Michael Jordan didn't run through coaches. Larry Bird didn't run through coaches. Steph Curry hasn't run through coaches. Name me a coach LeBron has ever been coached by. I put that in quotation, coached by. And I like LeBron a lot. Like, don't get it twisted. He's just a complicated guy who has survived in their career during his tenure or shortly thereafter. Ty Lue didn't. Ty Lue's such a highly coveted coach, but he didn't stick around. Frank Vogel, good luck. It's only Eric Spoelstra. And he took in a lot of information, good and bad, about LeBron during that time. I think the Heat are going to lose this series. I think it's the Lakers. I took the Lakers in six. They're huge dogs. The Heat are huge dogs in Vegas. But I will say this about what it can look like if there's a Heat victory. I think the animosity, the intensity against LeBron can have two benefits for Miami. By the way, they can also have real problems. I mean, LeBron could just be like, to hell with this organization. Because the thing is, you could tell me the Cavs are actually more angry at LeBron, and just you'd be wrong. The Cavs have mixed feelings in that community and that organization about LeBron. Are they happy he left? No. But they got a championship. They view themselves as the dorky guy who dated the supermodel. The Heat don't view themselves that way. If beggars can't be choosers, that's true. It's equally true that choosers get an extra level of bitterness when they're forced to beg. And that was the Heat. Like, we're not people that beg. What are you're leaving us? You're breaking up with me? And that's going to play itself out in the level of intensity and dislike that Jimmy Butler, who wasn't even a part of it, will happily adopt. And while it can motivate LeBron, it'll be curious to see how he goes against a team that does not like him. When you hate someone enough, you don't fear them, even if you should. That's going to play out. AD has got to be incredible in all these games. And you have a Heat team, again, an underdog, where Bam Adebayo is going to have to go up against Anthony Davis, which is a problem for Bam. AD's defensive skills and athleticism are far superior to the guys that were trying to guard Bam in that Celtics series. But if AD's on Bam, he's not on somebody on the perimeter. We saw his ability, Anthony Davis's, to guard guys like Jamal Murray. He can do it. That frees up Tyler Herro and Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler's going to throw a lot of minutes, I think, guarding LeBron, getting physical. I know he's older, but Andre Iguodala's looked good in flashes. And the high point of his career was guarding LeBron James in the finals several years ago, where he won an MVP in the finals he probably shouldn't have. The Heat can win this series if they can flummox LeBron in a few games. No one's better positioned to do that because of the psychology of the series. If AD isn't the best player on the floor, not named LeBron, for those games. And if the Heat's really triumvirate attack breaks down, because they can beat you from at least three places. Bam can beat you. We saw that the Celtics. Herro can beat you. We saw that earlier in the series. And Jimmy Butler can beat you. It's going to be the most intense, interesting NBA Finals in terms of the loathing that exists. And not the kind where you play each other in the Finals again and again and again, like the Warriors and the Heat. Or excuse me, the Warriors and the Cavs. They didn't like each other, but it was born out of respect, right? They'd been through the battles together. The Heat just don't like LeBron James, and it's going to be an interesting series as a result. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. Give us a call. Who you got? Prediction time. Heat or Lakers? LeBron or that Riley team? Every bit molded in his image, like the Lakers are molded in King James. 855-212-4CBS. We'll take some calls on Ryder Than You. I'm Bill Ryder. Next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Ryder Than You podcast.
Welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Thanks for hanging out. I can't keep the days of the week straight, which is okay at my house because my son just learned them and he's very excited that he memorized them. So he'll say to me, Daddy, today's Wednesday because that comes after Tuesday. And I realize my little dude is way ahead of me on the old calendar thing than I am. But I just looked. I double-checked. It's Wednesday. Happy Wednesday. Thanks for being here. Some baseball talk around the corner. Andrew Bogish in just a moment. At Andrew Bogish on Twitter. Speaking of Twitter, Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. If you want to hit me up, phone line 855-2124-CBS. Mark Hansen tweets at me and the Heat. Me and the Miami Heat together again. At some point in this series, I'll tell you some funny stories about my time with the Heat. Man, they did not like me. They did not like me at all. Neither did some reporters. I'll tell you a great story about a reporter, too, who I don't know if it makes me a bad person, but used to complain to the Heat that I wrote garbage after a green in private. So I just turned my tape recorder on one day in the media room. And when he did it, I threatened to put it in a story if he didn't stop lying to me about the team. That was a cutthroat time, man. Mark Hansen tweets at Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. I think that guy's out of the business. Shooting has to be excellent for the Heat. Hero, Robinson, and Dragic. Yeah, and that is another. I don't want to overstate it. The Lakers are the favorites. And I could give you a bunch of reasons why, but let me just boil it down to LeBron James. Like, it's two words, one name. Victory is it's not certain, but it's probable. But there are some weaknesses on that Lakers team. And guarding the three-point shot has been one of them this year. It just has been. And that's probably going to be exacerbated by the fact Avery Bradley's not in that bubble. They've been able to make it work with Anthony Davis on the perimeter a good amount. Remember, it wasn't really AD who stopped Jokic. That was a Dwight Howard thing. Dwight Howard was able to mess with Jokic a little bit. AD was on the perimeter a lot, and he certainly was in that first-round series. But the Lakers have few options and answers to all the guys that can hit shots out on the perimeter. And I haven't even mentioned Andre Iguodala, who's not a shooter by any stretch. Not a star anymore, but he had some big shots finally in that series. The guy's a closer. He seems a lot more dangerous than people think. 855-212-4CBS. Let's go to Detroit. Jack, what up, buddy? Thanks for listening. You're on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, what's up, Bill? Hey, man, just thinking about this this matchup. It's a toss-up, man. The Lakers are obviously the favorite. I think it's going to determine who can handle AD. And I don't know if they got enough bigs behind Bam to handle him. I think that's going to be the difference in the series. Bam got to draw a lot of fouls. I don't know if that Olenek or whoever else is backing him up going to be able to slow AD down. But back on the LeBron, I'm fascinated by LeBron, man, because I think he's changed the game when it comes to basketball from a business sense. And I think some of that probably played in the hand in the Miami situation, because I don't think LeBron's ever been coached. Like, you think about his coaches, it's nobody in there that stands out. So by the time he got to Miami, you know, he was the man. I think he kind of pulled his coaches along. And now he goes on there thinking he's going to do the same thing. He got Wade and Bosh on the side and kind of try to push Spoelstra out the way, not knowing he really had a real good coach at that time. And so that power struggle, I think, with LeBron trying to build his brand, and it kind of seemed like they both were right. Riley, you know, has a good Riley is Riley. LeBron is LeBron. And it seemed like they both were right. They just kind of met at the wrong time, and things didn't work out. But LeBron really set the template, man, outside of the game of basketball on how to be successful, you know. And as far as staying out of trouble, keeping yourself in shape, working on your game, and being about your money, where you really are the asset. So I think all that kind of came into play with this situation with Miami, but it's going to be real fun to see how who comes out on top.
Jack, thanks for the call, buddy. Good stuff. Appreciate John, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, which is sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico's offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. I'm with you. The ability to guard Anthony Davis is critical. There aren't as many bodies with that Heat team. I'll just say this, and it's a different matchup and a different situation, but Eric Spoelstra ran, I think they ran zone defense on two possessions in the first round of the playoffs. And that became almost every possession defensively in several of the games in that series against the Celtics. And what that did is it crowded the middle, and it really forced guys to take shots from the outside. Kemba Walker wasn't hitting. They thought Jason Tatum might be a little vulnerable to the moment, and it was highly effective. And my point is this. Maybe it'll be zone defense. Maybe it'll be something else. Eric Spoelstra, all his time in the video room, is as good as anyone in the NBA at making in-game and post-game adjustments. AD has to do the things you're talking about. You're 100% right. And their bodies to guard him are limited. That's 100% true. If anybody can confound Anthony Davis a little bit to a lot as a coach, it's Eric Spoelstra. And it's interesting. If they devise a scheme where you've got LeBron or AD on the wing with an open shot, right? If those guys stay on the perimeter in a zone defensive situation, do you really believe that they're going to hit those shots? LeBron hits huge threes. He's a clutch player, but he's not a historically great three-point shooter. Not bad, but he's not Steph Curry. It's not what he does. It's not what he's about. And what will happen in those situations, especially if they create some zone, is LeBron will try to get through it as best he can, draw more defenders, and create open looks. And he'll get them for his teammates. Do you think Anthony Davis can hit them? Do you think he can be the guy we saw in that knockdown, brutal dagger of a buzzer beater and whatever it was, game three or game two, whatever game it was? Doesn't that feel like a year ago? I think it's a question mark. The Lakers have the tools. Can they hit the shots? And I think you're right about Riley and LeBron both. Look, they both needed each other. And I think there's resentment toward that. I think they both recognize massive egos, huge stars in any walk of life. Look, it's definitely true in TV and radio. Have to have help getting somewhere. And you'd be surprised how many successful people actually have resentment to those that help them. It's a weird facet of my business. It's a weird facet of every business. And it might sound over the top or like I'm kissing his ass, but I'm not. Like, that's why I go out of my way to tell people like Jim Rome. And I'm not Jim's friend, right? He's just been really gracious to me over my career. And when I get to fill in for him, like, Jim Rome is a huge difference maker in my career. He is. People don't say it enough. There's no harm in getting help. Have people give you advice, give you opportunities, give you chances. I don't know that Pat Riley and LeBron James see it that way. I know they don't. Right? Like, I'm the alpha. I'm the guy. I'm the man. And that's part of what's going to be intense in the series. These guys want to craft a narrative about themselves. These guys, LeBron and Riley, are as close in their own mind's eye as a human being can get to being immortal, because they know that their name is going to live on. That's part of the drama and part of what motivates them. There's nothing wrong with that ego. It's what makes them so great. What was the line from Wall Street? Greed is good. Well, in sports, ego is good. The need to be remembered forever. And Riley believes, and I think rightfully so. And by the way, I'm not making this stuff up. Riley wrote a book that has half of this stuff in there. LeBron's talked about it. I've covered both teams. Riley, now this is speculation, but it's accurate speculation. Riley knows that if he can win, his team can win this NBA championship with his handpicked coach and his handpicked GM and guys he drafted, then you'll be able to say, and people will, you know, I guess it was really Riley who was the genius of that whole LeBron. I mean, LeBron was great, but it was Riley who really taught him how to do it. Conversely, if he doesn't win, LeBron can point to every championship he's had and say, there's only one consistent ingredient to the greatness that I've been around. It's not Pat Riley. It's not Dwayne Wade. It's not Chris Bosh. It's not Kyrie Irving. It's not Kevin Love. It's not David Blatt. That's a joke. A little David Blatt joke because they feel good. It's not Anthony Davis. It's LeBron James. These guys have everything a human being could want. They have money, they have wealth, they have fame. If they are not the greatest all time at what they do, they are in that conversation in the history of all mankind of what they do. They want more. That's why they're Pat Riley and LeBron James. They want to best the other one. They want to be the singular genius. They want to be the singular big man in that situation. And that's what's at stake, and they both know it. And LeBron can go out there and be like, it doesn't matter who we play, but we've got Anthony Davis who doesn't know the rules of the game, who gave the game away. We just heard tell us, and this is a lot more important than LeBron, after Cleveland's big, it's the Heat. He hates him. He didn't say that part, but he kind of did. I love it. I love when people hate each other in sports. We don't have enough of this. This fake, passive-aggressive, I like everybody. No, but no, these guys don't. The thing that's different here is the Heat really believe they gave LeBron the keys to the kingdom, and he ran away with it. And LeBron really believes that that is the most petulant, paternalistic, condescending perspective one could offer up the most talented basketball player of all time. And the truth is they're both right. And they both want to prove it in the finals. I can't wait. All right, 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. Do you know who's never, at least to us, paternalistic? He's great to his kids. Who's never going to just try to big time you? Andrew Bogish. That's a transition, Andrew. Is it a good one? We don't have to answer that question. But we got there.
Well, I'll accept it.
It's yours. Happy Wednesday. Do you know today's Wednesday? Wednesday today.
I knew today was Wednesday. I could not have told you what the date was without looking at the bottom of my computer where it's in the bottom right-hand corner. But I got you on Wednesday. September 30th would have thrown me.
Day after my wife's birthday, so I was able to get all over that. All my wife wanted for her birthday, this is true, was to watch the presidential debate. And I think it just turned out to be the worst birthday present. She likes politics. Let's not talk about it. That was a rough one. Hey, I was going to ask you, we've had some cameos from one of your kids, I think.
Yes.
Your wife was in the background yesterday. Are there any family?
I heard,
are there any pets that we like that could like jump up on the, you got a cat that could come hang out?
We have a tadpole that we hope soon will be a full-fledged frog, but he's in a tank upstairs, so he will not be hopping behind me just yet.
That's the singular, that was your commitment to wildlife in the house, was a tadpole.
I was ready for a turtle. I thought we were going to get a turtle, and they came home with a tadpole. So that was a curveball for me, and we're just now waiting for this thing to become some kind of frog.
You ever had frog's legs? They're good.
I have not, no.
Really? Maybe it's because I'm from Iowa. You know, a little trick, and this is what the people want to hear in Sports Talk Radio, so let's give it to them. If you just take an empty hook that's shiny and dangle it over a frog, in the wild, they'll think it's a fly, and they'll bite it, and you haul it in and eat some frog legs. How's that?
So if this one gets annoying, that's my trick for getting rid of it.
Yeah, just you can demonstrate to and traumatize simultaneously your children with that trick. Tom, Tom just lit up like you did, Andrew, when we brought up that movie, whatever that movie was, you know, a week ago.
I forgot.
My interest has peaked. I didn't know this was a Midwestern tradition. This is like a French cuisine thing, frog's legs. I've had them in Paris. I didn't know this was a Midwestern thing.
I didn't know it was a Parisian thing. I feel a lot fancier than I ever. Yeah, so we used to go, when I lived in Iowa, we'd go camping. And, you know, we would catch bluegill and crappie and the occasional bass and cook them up while we were camping with mom and dad and my brother and sister. But it was the frog legs that I loved. So I would go out with a pole and an empty hook and just, there'd be a million frogs. And they would just, like, look at it and do nothing. And then they would just leap to it. Looking back, it sounds so cruel. But frog legs are good.
No, they're delicious. They're, like, down the direction of, like, chicken wings, but a little more delicate. They're
50
good.
50 shades of ways to eat frog legs, Andrew Bogus. 50 shades. What's going on?
Here come your headlines, sponsored by GEICO, who has introduced the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers that last your full policy term. Visit GEICO.com/giveback for info and eligibility. A fourth Tennessee Titan player has now tested positive for COVID-19, raising their overall total to 9. The good news, though, still no positives in Minnesota, where the Titans played last weekend, and this new positive had no close contacts with any other Titan. Tennessee still scheduled to host the Steelers, and the Vikings still expected in Houston this weekend. The NFL apparently intent on playing these games somehow, maybe pushing them to Monday or Tuesday. And then there are the Raiders. Multiple players, including QB Derek Carr, were at a fundraiser Monday night for tight end Darren Waller's foundation. The event was indoors, and the players and guests were not wearing masks. The golf course that hosted it has already been fined $2,000 for violating multiple local COVID-19 protocols. NFL players are prohibited from attending any event that violates such ordinances. Unless you have petty hate for them coursing through your veins, maybe like me. What a start for the Yankees last night.
And the pitch is swung on and hit in the air to right and deep. Back goes Naquin on the track. He's at the wall. She's gone. Oh, what a start for the Yankees. It's Judgment Day. Aaron Judge just hit a 2-run home run, a Judgian blast to right field.
That's John Sterling, Susan Waldman, Yankees Radio. Aaron Judge, a 2-run homer on Shane Bieber's fourth pitch of Game 1 last night in Cleveland. Gleyber Torres' 2-run shot in the fifth ended Bieber's night, a season-high 7 runs allowed on a season-high 9 hits.
I just wasn't as aggressive as I wish I would have been with my off-speed stuff in the zone and maybe some fastballs in and just challenging these guys a little bit more.
Yankee starter Gerrit Cole K'd 13 over 7. Those the second most strikeouts in Yankee postseason history. They took Game 1 last night 12-3. Can end the series now tonight. The White Sox took their opener in Oakland and Houston won in Minnesota yesterday, both by 4-1 scores. The Rays beat the Blue Jays 3-1. All four AL series continue today while the four NL series begin. So we have 8 games on the way, starting with the Reds and Braves in Atlanta at noon Eastern. It ends with the Dodgers and Brewers in LA at 10 p.m. Serena Williams is out of the French Open thanks to an Achilles injury she suffered during the U.S. Open. Serena withdrew this morning instead of playing her second round match. She doesn't think she could have gotten through 2 weeks in Paris. Rafael Nadal with a straight set win today over young American Mackie McKenzie. Stan Wawrinka also winning, while Victoria Azarenka and John Isner were upset. Only the Lakers and the Heat 8 are left in the NBA bubble. The finals begin this evening. The tip-off at Disney World is just after 9 o'clock. Notre Dame football is resuming practice today without 18 players who have tested positive for coronavirus, 7 more in isolation, another 14 in quarantine at last check, the Irish blaming a pregame meal, and then a sick player on the sideline versus USF for the outbreak. And the Las Vegas Aces held off the Connecticut Sun last night 66-63. To reach the WNBA Finals, they face the Seattle Storm starting on Friday. Bill, back to you.
Bogus, I got just real quick, I know you got to run, but I've got something that I think triangulates all of our interests. For me, I like trivia. For Tommy, likes music. And for you, as a 50 Shades guy, on this day in 1982, Marvin Gaye released Sexual Healing as a single.
Okay. That's a good song. And if you were going to watch or read 50 Shades of Grey, that's a good song to set the mood with, I guess, right?
We got there. And I love everything about it. Andrew Bogish is the man on Twitter at Andrew Bogish. Tom DiBenedetto, producer underscore Tom. If you want to call us, 855-212-4CBS. You just heard Bogish talk about Serena Williams pulling out of the French Open. I think it speaks to a bigger reality about where we are in our sports history. And we're going to get into that when we come back in a moment here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Chiefs are must-watch football. But what an amazing game that's going to be against New England. That is incredibly interesting. And I'm done sleeping on the Chiefs against good teams. I mean, I should have had money on Kansas City in that Monday night game. It wasn't even close. So, Bill Ryder with you, 855-212-4CBS if you want to give us a call. I'm a huge Serena Williams fan for a lot of reasons, and not just because I, unlike many of you, love tennis. My daughter, Madeline, who actually plays tennis now and is 11, is getting a little too good for comfort's sake. It was cute when we used to play and, you know, I would let her win some points. Now she's hitting straight winners as an 11-year-old against me, and I find myself very competitive. And part of the reason she plays is because Serena Williams was the first person that ever connected my work to my daughter's actual life. And I didn't realize that, so she sort of told us. But the first time that Serena Williams won a Grand Slam event that my daughter saw, Madeline was stunned that people were cheering for a woman. She didn't really associate what I do, because most of what I talk about is men's sports, of course, with her world. And Serena Williams became, as for a lot of young girls, something more than an athlete. And I also just, I root for underdogs. I root for great stories. And in international things, I obviously root for Americans, right? Like World Cup, the Olympics. And you can do that in tennis and to a certain extent golf, particularly when the Ryder Cup rolls around. And so for a lot of reasons, I've just been an enhanced fan of Serena Williams for several years now. I mean, we have so many Serena Williams books in my house for my daughter, it's overwhelming. And it's been a presumption. We've all assumed that Serena would pass and tie and then pass Margaret Court for the most women's Grand Slam titles and singles ever. Serena has 23 and Margaret Court has 24. And the news that Serena Williams is out at the French Open, tough turnaround from the U.S. Open, back-to-back, basically back-to-back events, with an Achilles injury, to me, eerily, at the beginning of this, but eerily feels similar, because Serena's 39, to Tiger Woods, when we've seen the last year and a half Serena Williams win an event and be in the finals of an event, and yet you can see age creeping in, but you're like, oh, you know, age doesn't affect athletes anymore. And the same thing with Tiger, won the Masters, my God, almost a year and a half now, and then in this past U.S. Open was brutal. And what it made me realize is that we're in a unique time in sports history. This is the first wave of athletes since they became more than just people who compete in sports to start to hit the retirement age. These legendary, all-time great, transcendent talents who are going to go away in terms of their play because of age. And I'm not saying Joe Montana wasn't great or Bill Russell wasn't remarkable and incredible or Willie Mays or Ted Williams or Babe Ruth or however far back you want to go. But it's really been since the 90s. You know, most people would point to Michael Jordan becoming an icon as a brand manager, as a brand ambassador, along with a player, where sports became about more than just sports. It became about your brand. It became about your individual business and how you as a person were a business. LeBron James is that now. All these guys are. And Serena, too. It became about fame on a different level. I mean, our culture's changed. The whole Kardashian, famous for the sake of being famous, it being its own commodity now, is a reality. So think about how that enhances athletes. And that's because there's so much money in athletics. I mean, there wasn't the kind of salaries and incomes that you see from NBA players and baseball players and soccer players and tennis players and golfers 30, 40 years ago. Tiger changed golf, including financially. Jordan changed basketball, including financially. Serena Williams changed tennis, especially for women, particularly financially. I mean, she's been hammering that pay us the same amount of money drum for a really, really long time. Messi, for all the excellence of soccer before him, is a guy that makes, you know, if you include bonuses, $150 million a year and help transform super clubs into these monopolies in Europe and what you had to do to keep these guys in the power they exerted. It's a different level of athlete now. And since that change in our culture, since athletes became these mighty and massive figures, and they get involved in politics, LeBron James is an incredibly impressive businessman. Magic Johnson was owning, you know, some movie theaters, was it McDonald's? That's small fry now. LeBron James is going to be a billion-dollar entrepreneur. He's going to pass on a legacy of business to his children. And in this wave of athletes that we've seen over the last 20, 30 years, this has all come together, we haven't seen mass retirements, right? It just, I mean, think about the folks who are at the end of their careers who represent these things. Serena Williams, that Achilles, 39 years old. She may never get there. She may never get there. It's hard to win these things. LeBron James, and I know it feels like he's timeless, and he looks like he's timeless. He's the best player on earth. But the guy turns 36 in December. He can't do it forever. I don't think. He's the only guy on this list that I'm unsure. Maybe he'll be playing at 55, and we'll just be like, all right, man, nanotechnology or whatever. I know it's another tennis comparison, but Roger Federer is the greatest of all time. And he can feel Djokovic and Nadal creeping up on his number. And he couldn't play in the U.S. Open, and he's not playing the French Open because of his knee. And the U.S. Open didn't have Nadal. That's an opening. And he's not here on clay where he could be, where a lot of competitors struggle. Messi's a guy that's approaching the end of his time. Clayton Kershaw, tonight, you're going to have the Dodgers go and do their thing. We'll talk this here in a second. I'm really interested in this topic. I think the Dodgers are the perfect prism in about 10 minutes to get into the pressure of a best of three series. Kershaw's not even starting game one tonight. You can make the case that Walker Buehler should be the man for a reason. We'll get into it. But some of that is age. 27-year-old Clayton Kershaw ain't sitting game one. He wasn't reliable in big moments at his peak. Drew Brees is another one. I think Brees, and I've hammered this when this show, Rider Than You, what's up, I'm Bill Rider, thanks for listening, was on CBS Sports Radio in the evenings for the 3 years before we got this time slot. I think Drew Brees could have been the second or third best quarterback of all time, but he needed another Super Bowl or two, and he's come so, so close. So, so close. I'm going to give you a name that isn't anywhere near the end of his career, but I bet the Sands feel like they're running too quickly through the hourglass for Mike Trout. Think about how many times that guy has not been relevant. He is the best player. I mean, he is by far the best player of his generation. And unlike the other sports, he can't bend the game to his will. Baseball's different. And unlike the other sports, I go out of my way to watch Angels games because I love Mike Trout. And I think Shohei Ohtani, when he was able to do both, was the most interesting story maybe in sports for that brief window. And because as a Cubs fan, I have to respect what I have to respect. And Albert Pujols, even at his age, another guy for whom it's basically over. But I can't bring myself to watch Angels games in a regular year once we get to July. It's brutal. Let's appreciate these athletes while we can. You don't have to be a tennis fan to see in Serena Williams a reminder that what's been built up, who these athletes are in our culture now, it's new. It's this generation, right? And they are slowly but surely going to go away and give way to the Mahomes of the world. 855-212-4CBS if you want to give us a call. I am really excited to talk some baseball with you. Four teams played last night in the playoffs. Good to great baseball teams who lost and whose season is almost over. How we navigate a best of three MLB opening round in the playoffs and how the Dodgers speak to the upside and downside, the remarkable swings of this new format. Some baseball talk, some Dodgers talk, some insight on the MLB playoffs when we come back in a moment here. I'm Bill Ryder, next on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Ryder Than You podcast.
What up? Happy Wednesday. Bill Ryder with you. Thank you for hanging out with us. We are, as always, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. Rocket can. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. I'm on Twitter, Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. The excellent executive producer of this program, Tom DiBenedetto, producer underscore Tom, Andrew Bogish on updates at Andrew Bogish. Interesting change for Major League Baseball. And I'm a contradiction here on baseball because two things are true about me simultaneously that don't really fit together. One is that I'm an absolute traditionalist. I don't like a lot of runs being scored in most baseball games. I don't like the idea of the designated hitter in the National League because I grew up in the National League and it seems foreign to what I do as a fan. I miss hit and runs and stolen bases being something that's significant. I can't pretend to be a big fan of angle, trajectory, and all the other very smart approaches, if bad for the game, to winning baseball games. On the other hand, because I love baseball, I recognize, maybe in a way that, and I offend a lot of baseball writers when I say this and they get really angry, it's just not as relevant as it needs to be. It is overwhelmingly relevant in each of its individual markets. It is. But here's a test I would give you. If you're listening in Indianapolis, or you're listening in Richmond, or you're listening in Portland, or you're listening in Dallas, do you really care about one of these baseball teams on a random Tuesday, or even in the playoffs, when they play on the other side of the country, or even 5 hours away, when they're not the team you root for? I don't think you do. I don't think that's a reality. I mean, Yankees fans are annoying to people in large part because they're so myopic. They think that baseball revolves around the Yankees. But that is not unique to those fans. That is true of every single fan of every baseball team on earth. It is. Royals fans watch Royals games even when they're bad. They don't care about the Marlins. They barely care about the teams in their division, only as it affects them. That's a problem for baseball. And it makes this three-game series compelling, an interesting way to try to sell the game. And I've been on it. I've been on board with it. I've been excited about it. You know, I think my view is the obvious view. Great for the game, potentially bad for major market teams. I think those things correlate. And for the Dodgers, it really gets spotlighted tonight. Because this is a team who will gamble everything, more than just this season. I mean, this project that's taken them to 8 consecutive NL West division crowns. And they're going to do it on Walker Buehler. By the way, Buehler's got amazing stuff. Was on the DL for part of the year, has a blister issue. But when he's out there and that blister's not impacting him, his stuff is amazing. And he is part of, obviously, the best starting rotation in baseball. But it's a 3-game series. It doesn't matter what the long game says will happen. It's a single baseball game. And if you lose this game tonight, Dodgers fans, all the dread you feel, all the frustration you feel, all the anger you feel, that normally comes in the NLCS or the World Series, is going to descend after one damn baseball game against the Brewers? It is. Think about this. Think about being the Twins, who have now lost, and Tom DiBenedetto gave me this stat of darkness. Like, we need more of that in our lives, but still, it is what it is. 17 straight playoff games. 17! Lost to the Astros last night, which I know. Boo for everybody in Houston who are like, yeah, we showed you. Yeah, get a little further. The Blue Jays lost to Tampa Bay last night. The Indians got torched by that Yankees offense. So ugly. I'm not going to lie, I was rooting for Cleveland. I was. And that means now the Twins, the A's, the Toronto's, and the Indians, seasons are almost over. You lose one more game, it's done. That's it. You're an elimination game already. You played a single postseason baseball game and you're a game away from going down. The pressure on the Dodgers is absolute. It's not very often that you have to win a World Series or you have failed on an epic level. That is an unfair standard. The Cubs have had that standard, which is part of the reason they failed so many times. And the only way the Cubs got over that hump was by playing a team with the same history in the Indians, who blew a 3-1 series lead. The Dodgers are juggernauts, I get it. They have a young, promising team. They can win 8 more crowns. I get it. NL West crowns. I get it. But after 8 years, I just don't believe Dave Roberts, their manager, when he tries to downplay what is massive pressure in tonight's game.
it's kind of World Series or bust every year. This year, I think it's just, I think it's certainly would be more special, I think, if it could even be possible after, you know, talking about winning a championship. But we've all gone through a lot. The whole industry has. But I think for us, we're just, right now, we're just focused on the Brewers, and we'll see what happens.
I mean, you can almost hear the pain in his voice as he lies to the media, right? Because it's not just the history of the 8 straight division titles in the NL West, or the World Series losses in the World Series, or the fact that they believe, Dodgers fans, that organization, the players, believe earnestly and truly that the Astros stole the World Series from them. Whether true or not, that's their belief. This is the best Dodgers team I've ever seen. I did Dodgers radio for a couple years. I worked on a local radio station here in LA that is the home of the Dodgers. The Dodgers own the station. Did a lot of Dodgers talk. I loved it. It was great talking baseball every day. 855-212-4CBS if you want to give us a call. I followed them with a lot of interest. My Cubs beat them in an NLCS to go in 16 to that World Series. All those teams are great. I mean, you win the division now 8 years in a row, but the 7 years preceding it, you're a really good baseball team. This year, they have won 71.7% of their games in the shortened season. 72% of their games are wins, which would be a record. It is a record for winning percentage, had it continued. They are first in home runs in baseball this year. They are first in runs scored in baseball this year, 118 and 349 respectively. They are first in slugging percentage in baseball. Their earned run average as a team is 3.02. Their whip, this one is the one that just jumps off the page. Their whip is almost one. It's 1.06. Get the bleep out of here. Opponent's batting average first, 213. I can keep going. They have the best bullpen in baseball, and it's not even close. They have the best starting rotation in baseball, and it's not even close. This is a Dodgers team that is built unlike any we've ever seen before, as good as they have been. Their starting rotation alone is absurd. Buehler, who is their ace of the future, and obviously their ace now, Clayton Kershaw, with all the baggage, all the history, but the excellence. Kershaw's been a machine this year. He's been amazing. Dustin May has a live arm, which pales in comparison to Julio Urias. I mean, I can go down the list. Their earned run average, their starters' ERA was, don't have a single guy whose ERA is above 3.44. Think about that. That's an ace on many baseball teams. And yet anybody can lose a couple games. Are the Brewers the favorite? No. Are the Brewers the team that we saw make an NLCS recently? No. But momentum's weird. You win one game to open up this best of three. You close out that series by winning one of the next two. All of a sudden, you're feeling yourself. As our friend Kirk Morrison said, not to do. I don't get this expression, but I'm going to use it anyway. You start to smell yourself. Yeah, feeling good. I can do this. And the reverse is true. Think about the foreboding and the worry and the pressure and the sense of here we go again. Again, those sands run through the hourglass for Dodgers and Dodgers fans if they lose game one tonight. And think about all of that resting on the guy who will start game two. Clayton Kershaw is either going to pitch to close out the series, which is insane since it'll be game two, or he'll pitch to make sure they don't get closed out. And I think you see a very high level of probability that the outcome of how he performs is based on which scenario they present him. Look, I'm not a Clayton Kershaw hater, but I'm also not going to lie to you, insult your intelligence, in order to push a narrative that the people I live around need to be true. I mean, you would think when you criticize Clayton Kershaw, it's the same thing as criticizing Biden or Trump to a supporter of that particular candidate. Their eyes bug out, the veins start to throb, there's you know, raised voices and irrational yelling. And you're just like, no, man, he hasn't been reliable in the playoffs. You don't know anything! Okay, just, so this, you know, the old don't talk about religion or politics or money with people, throw in Clayton Kershaw's abysmal level of consistency in the playoffs if you live in LA. Just if you ever travel here, just, you know, there you go. That is what, little tip from me to you. Clayton Kershaw is the best pitcher of his generation. He is the most talented pitcher I think I've seen. And I think that includes, you know, at my age level, going back where I can go, even Greg Maddux. But so is Chris Paul as a point guard. And so is Dan Marino as a quarterback. At a certain point, you have to claim a World Series or a championship in your respective sport to gild permanently in that sort of golden hue of all-time greatness a championship, which gets it done. And what's really interesting about Kershaw is I don't normally think the championship is required for greatness argument is required in baseball. Because in football, and I'm talking about a quarterback, I'm not talking about the best linebacker of all time. In football, how great you are as a quarterback absolutely correlates directly to how often you make the playoffs and how you do in the postseason. I mean, Peyton Manning's a perfect example. One of the great players of all time, consistently in the postseason, was not a consistent postseason quarterback, and in the two that he won, didn't play particularly well. But he got there enough that he could get it done, his defense to get it done. He carried them there. He gets the credit. In the NBA, you know that star players dominate series. Now, whoever wins Heat Lakers tonight will be about which guy is the best player on the floor, probably. In baseball, that's not usually true, right? Ryan Sandberg is always the go-to for me as an example of this. Chicago Cub, former MVP, Gold Glove winner, never played in a World Series. They didn't make the playoffs that often. I mean, I don't even know what it was for Sandberg. 84, 89, maybe some like when he was toward the end of his career in the 90s. Never even threat. Not really. Not since 84. It's different for Clayton Kershaw. You've won the NL West 8 years in a row. You've had an organization that's gotten you there. All-time great pitchers can't alone carry their teams to the playoffs, but they can carry their teams through the playoffs. Randy Johnson, Madison Bumgarner, Justin Verlander. Kershaw hasn't been that guy. And come what may, if he's not that guy, the Dodgers may not even see the second round of the playoffs. Because let's give the Dodgers the benefit of the doubt, right? Let's say they win tonight. And they should. They're a much better team than the Brewers. They're probably going to win. But let's say they win tonight. If Kershaw goes out there in game two and pitches like garbage, all of a sudden you have... This is what's crazy about these best of three series. Then the Dodgers are in the exact same position. The Twins, the A's, the Blue Jays, and the Indians are already in. They're a game away from losing. I have seen so many teams in baseball and the NBA, but really in baseball, come down from 2-0. I've seen teams come down from 3-1. The Cubs included. I should know this off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure the Cubs were down 2-0 to the Dodgers in that NLCS where they made the World Series. They were certainly down in that series. But you don't get the opportunity for the comeback. You don't have the runway you need in a best of three series. And that's going to be true throughout this entire bizarro MLB playoff situation. But it is going to be on fire. It is going to be enhanced times 1,000 for the Dodgers tonight. You can call it bad luck. I know Dodgers fans have. Like, how come in the year we're best situated to win a World Series, COVID happened and we have a best of three? It's true, but I feel a lot worse for teams like the Padres, right? The Dodgers have had 7 chances and haven't gotten it done. And it's going to come down to Clayton Kershaw again. And it's hard to know what confidence level you can have. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. Do you like Major League Baseball's best of three format? And this is more the question. It's not whether you like it. Will it draw you in to watch it in series that don't feature your team? Is this a route for baseball to find its footing again in terms of relevance nationally in the country? 855-212-4CBS. We'll take your calls here on Rider Than You. I'm Bill Ryder, next on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Rider Than You podcast.
Welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. A little breaking news for you. According to Diana Rossini over at ESPN, I'll read you her tweet. Sunday's game between the Steelers and Titans is being postponed per multiple sources. They are considering all options to reschedule Monday night as one of them. This will be based on test results. Monday night is one of them. That, I think that underscores the desperation the NFL understands that they're under from a scheduling perspective if COVID can push a game back. Because one day might make the difference in COVID testing, but the odds, the likelihood, obviously is very small. And you postpone a game if positive tests continue to spread, the spread tends to happen for a while and you have to isolate for a long time. The concern, look, this ain't good news and I'm not blaming anybody. This is the reality we're in. We have a worldwide pandemic that has become a divisive issue, unfortunately. But it's not the NFL's fault. It's not the Steelers' fault this happened. It might be the Titans' fault. I guess we'll have to figure out what behavior happened. But what you got to be worried about, the concern you have to have if you're the NFL, is the week after that. You can't conduct yourself in a way where this continues to spread and you've got two teams that then would, in theory, infect two other teams in a different matchup. And we'll keep you updated as we get more information. But for fantasy purposes, Steelers-Titans not going to happen. And for just health purposes, it's disconcerting. It's worrisome. There were some suggestions before the NFL season started. And I understand why media prognosticators, myself included, when we throw out our ideas, people, you know, can be like, well, you're not in charge and roll your eyes. But a good idea is a good idea, wherever it comes from. Some of the reporting coming out of Steve Ballmer deciding to get rid of Doc Rivers is that Ballmer's whole approach at Microsoft and now with the Clippers is to solicit ideas wherever they come from. It doesn't matter where they come from. So I'm going to take credit for them firing Doc Rivers on that column. But I'm also going to say it's a really smart philosophy. And so it wasn't mine, but some of my colleagues' good ideas that maybe the NFL should bake in two or three extra bye weeks for teams just to have padding, right? Just to make sure looking like a good idea now. Because then you could move some things around to try to make it work. Ugly situation. I mean, the other alternative becomes, and I can't pretend to be an expert on any level on the rights holders' deals with the NFL and what the flexibility is legally to have games on non-NFL nights. But you might, if you're that desperate, you might just, if things clear by Tuesday, you play Tuesday and it's a shortened week. Or you play Wednesday and it's a shortened week. I mean, there aren't good answers here. The game has to get in. And the other alternative, of course, is to push this back to a week 18 that doesn't yet exist and push back the playoffs a little bit. You cannot have an NFL season, I don't think, where you don't have every team play all 16 games. Can't be sending teams to the playoffs based on winning percentage. Not in the NFL, not when the margins that is that low. Be like taking this best of three series of Major League Baseball we just talked about and say, well, you know, the Yankees won game one, but we have a COVID outbreak now, so we're just going to, congratulations, Yankees, you win. In a small margin, the math is too extreme. We know a single game can make a difference. So again, breaking news, a report out of ESPN that Sunday's game between the Steelers and the Titans is being postponed, according to multiple sources talking to Diana Rossini. And she reports they are considering all options to reschedule Monday night as one of them. Tom, do you know what the Monday night game is? I don't know. I should know. Here, let me look real quick. Because that's the other thing is that becomes a lot more. It's too bad that they can't do Thursday night football next week, and it was this week's game.
It is Packers-Falcons, actually.
Pretty good game. I mean, it's, again, Packers for me are must-watch. Are must-watch.
And the Falcons, man, I mean, are they going to get off the schneid of completely embarrassing themselves every week, or are they going to do it now on Monday Night Football?
I mean, we've got a great game tomorrow. I mean, who would have seen Denver versus Jets, 0-3 versus 0-3. I've been meaning to expand my portfolio to, I don't know, professional table tennis. Just throw in some, maybe tomorrow's the, what a terrible game that is.
Tiddlywinks, pro Tiddlywinks on TV would be better than this.
Pro Tiddlywinks.
Yeah, Brett Rippon will be starting for the Broncos.
I used to get mesmerized by professional bowling. I'm not a very good bowler, but I would sit in front of, like, you know, the Ocho or whatever it was a few years ago and just watch it for hours when I couldn't sleep.
The PBA, Pete Weber was pretty legendary. That could get interesting at times. I also like watching darts, by the way.
I've never gotten into darts.
Yeah.
Really?
The Premier League of Darts, they have them in England. They have, like, events in arenas where there's, like, 10,000 people there watching this darts thing. It's crazy.
They used to have a thing where, like, you could qualify in the States where you went to some dart championship, and if you won a pub in Ireland sponsored by Guinness.
Oh, wow.
And so
that
I went, yeah, in college, I went to one of these once, And it would be like if I showed up to play LeBron James in one-on-one basketball. Like, I'll give it a go.
Yeah, darts is no joke, man. Those triple destroyed. 20s are not easy.
I got, you know, just like, you're done. I'm done? Yeah, go buy a Guinness. It's not free. No pub. Not even a single drink for you. All right, 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. We'll get to these headlines here in a second with Mr. Bogus. Let's hit a phone call or two. Maddie, here in beautiful L.A., thank you for listening, buddy. You're back on CBS Sports Radio.
Billy! Hey, great job, man. You posed an interesting question. I'm with you, being a National League kid. I'm not Team DH, but I do love having, you know, a full slate. 8 games of playoffs over a 2-day span. I mean, that's definitely, you know, Ty Cobb's dream. You know what I mean? I love it, man. As far as the Dodgers, you're right, man. But I tend to think that it's like, you know, a team that starts a playoff run that's been in elimination games every day. Well, that's the Dodgers for the last 3 years. All right. The pressure cooker is on. But the Dodgers are going to be coming out like that good steamed white rice just on time. Hey, Miami, thanks for coming. Your Marlins are going to be done pretty soon. We're going to dispatch of the Heat in a 5-gamer at best. You'll be lucky to get the gentleman sweep because we like Riles. Hey, Bill, keep up the good work. And to all the East Side, West Side, Midwest riders, keep your head up. Let's do this. Outro.
Great call, Maddie. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you on CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line. If you want to join the conversation, that number is 855-212-4227, and it is sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you, so what are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. That is something we should hit on, and I am cognizant of the fact that radio hosts often speak way too much about the places in which they are sitting and not the places in which their listeners are sitting. That is something I've tried to be very aware of in doing this show. And by the way, not the hateful bile that people throw out there with a little egg next to their face, but if you have things you want to hear, you have suggestions for the show, I mean this philosophically, it's your show. It's your time. It's we're asking you for time from your life. Hit me up at SportsRiter, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. It's probably why I haven't hit this topic yet, but it is amazing the degree to which Los Angeles, California, and it's where I'm sitting, where I live, is potentially the domineering epicenter of sports right now. The Lakers are probably going to win an NBA championship this year. That's a big deal. Again, we'll see what happens to the Dodgers, but if you had to pick one team, if you could pick one of the teams before yesterday's games, right, before you knew that the Yankees were going to dominate and the Astros and White Sox and Tampa Bay were going to win, if you pick one team, and if that team wins the World Series, you get $10 million. If they don't, you get zero. I think most of us are taking the Dodgers. You're just going to be like, you know what? I'm taking the best team in baseball. I'm taking the team that won 72% of their games. So that's a possibility. And I know that the NFL, we've talked about the fact the NFL is going to go through Arrowhead. It's going to go through Kansas City, even the Super Bowl. It's hard to believe the Chiefs aren't going to be in the Super Bowl. Then maybe they won't be. Even on the NFC side, things are really crowded. Before you get into the NFC West and what a slaughterhouse that is, you also have to worry about the Packers. But the NFC East is, I mean, I think a joke is a fair way to describe what's going on there. I think, you know, a dumpster fire of nearly epic proportions. The smart money is the Cowboys kind of figure it out, but who's afraid of the Cowboys in the postseason? I'm not. And the 3-0 Bears aren't exactly scaring the holy hell out of anybody. It's the Packers and maybe all those teams in the NFC West, including, and they get lost there. They're 2-1, and they're in last, and they're also tied for second. But the Rams here in L.A. are a really good football team. Interesting. Could be the year L.A. utterly and totally dominates. And I'm just going to go with my – it sounds like anti-New York bias, and it's not. My mom's from Jersey, just outside New York City. I was raised in Iowa, but in a New York home. And I love New York City. But can you imagine if the Knicks were about to win an NBA championship, the Yankees – and they're one of the favorites, but were the favorites in the World Series. And I don't know. Let's be nice to Tom. The Jets had that team, that roster, and that potential. I mean, that's all we would hear about from that network in Bristol. That's all they would do. That's it. That's like the only thing we're not getting that in LA. Where's the LA love for my East Coast colleagues across the spectrum of sports media? Whereas a lot, just because you don't live somewhere doesn't mean it doesn't have value. Like breaking news. Brewers fans like to hear about the Brewers, right? Texas fans like to hear about the University of Texas. Not everything has to be myopically the place that we're sitting. In this case, and just I think in this case, L.A. is worthy of some attention. Appreciate Maddie in L.A. drawing our eyes to it. Andrew Bogish, the man, the myth, the mystery. What's the most mysterious thing about you, Bogish? If you tell us, does that ruin the mystery?
Yes, at face value it does. But you've asked very deep questions.
Trying to get to know you, bro.
To begin these updates the last couple of days. I'm only really on like non-official shades of Bogish. So I got 41 more to kind of break down for you. One of them I assume will be mysterious, then I'll have an answer for you in the near future.
I'm going to wait with bated breath. I'm not going to rush it. You know, what is the old thing? When you look into the abyss stares back. I can see 50 Shades of Bogus staring back at me, and I'm not gonna rush that. There's a lot going on there. What is happening in the world of sports outside of and maybe including New York City?
Well, a lot has changed in the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 minutes. You had it as a report. It is now official. The Titans and the Steelers will not play Sunday. The NFL is now targeting officially Monday or Tuesday. There are now 9 positive COVID-19 tests in Nashville with a 4th Titan player coming back positive from yesterday's round of testing. The league has not said anything yet about the Vikings and the Texans scheduled for Sunday. Minnesota hosted Tennessee last weekend. They still have had no positives come back from that scenario. Now, here's the good news as well. Back in Tennessee, contact tracing found no close contacts for this new positive. So it sounds like the isolation they've been in for the last, whatever it is, 24 hours or so, may be working. Elsewhere in the NFL, Bucks wideout Chris Godwin could miss 2 weeks with a mild hamstring pull. The Eagles are putting rookie wideout Jalen Reagor on IR with a thumb injury. And Washington rookie defensive end Chase Young is out for at least this weekend with a groin injury. Serena Williams' pursuit of a record-tying 24 major titles will go into 2021. Serena pulled out of the French Open this morning instead of playing her second-round match. The problem, an Achilles injury from the U.S. Open.
I was able to get it somewhat better, but just looking long term in this tournament, will I be able to get through enough matches? And so for me, I don't think I could, and struggling to walk, so that's kind of a telltale sign that I should try to recover.
Which will apparently now take 4 to 6 weeks. For the first time in her career, Serena will go 3 calendar years between major titles. Rafael Nadal won today in straight sets. Stan Wawrinka and 29th-seeded Amanda Anisimova also won. Dominic Thiem battling American Jack Sock. John Isner, Victoria Azarenka also sent home today. One of the craziest baseball days ever begins at the top of the hour. The Braves and Reds started the first of 8 games. We're getting Game 1 in all 4 NL series and Game 2s in the AL. That includes the Minnesota Twins, who almost inconceivably have lost 17 consecutive playoff games after dropping Game 1 to Houston yesterday. It is the longest such streak ever in any of our 4 major leagues, and it dates back to 2004 when Joe Mauer was a rookie. Yesterday, Rocco Baldelli's team allowed 3 in the 9th after a throwing error prevented an inning-ending force out.
It's a play we have to make. It's a big moment in the game. We weren't able to make it, but you know, we have to kind of wipe what we saw today in some regards. We have to show up tomorrow ready to play.
Tomorrow is, of course, now today. Game 2 starts at 1 Eastern. The Lakers and Heat begin the NBA Finals at 9 Eastern this evening. Both teams 12-3 so far in these playoffs. The Rangers have bought out the final season of Henrik Lundqvist's contract. The future Hall of Fame goalie apparently wants to play elsewhere next season while the Rangers move on with 2 younger netminders. Lundqvist is number 6 all-time in wins, owns most of the goalie records in Ranger history. And the Las Vegas Aces held off the Connecticut Sun last night 66-63 in their 5th and decisive game. The Aces now face the Seattle Storm in the WNBA Finals, which begin Friday night. Bill, back to you.
Bogish, thank you. Good stuff from Andrew Bogish. I'm Bill Ryder. Phone number here, 855-212-4CBS. Scottie Pippen says what we're seeing in the bubble is nothing more than street pickup basketball. Does Adrian Peterson have a renaissance inside him? And some Major League Baseball questions we will answer for you in Buy or Sell next here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
You just drew up a scenario. I mean, I'm a believer in the multiverse, but this scenario where the Knicks are a contender and the Jets are a contender simultaneously, I'm sorry, there's no, even in infinite universes, I can't envision this happening.
You don't think it's real?
Is it just because I'm ruined as a Mets and Jets fan and there is a alternate universe where that exists, or am I right and there is no alternate universe where that exists?
I mean, if there's an infinite number of universes, right? If string theory is right and there's an infinite number of universes, then there's a universe where, I don't know, Mark Cuban bought the Knicks and not James Dolan. You've got some championships.
I think that's even more sad to think about.
If you want to place us at Earth 1, right, you want to be at the center of the multiverse, you're talking like Earth 58,236. Even if parallel dimension travel becomes available, you're never going to get there.
Multiple human lifetimes at the speed of light still wouldn't reach.
Let me just sell your hope.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I was looking for. Thank you.
Sell.
All right, to another unpleasant topic and this COVID suspension. It is now official that Steelers-Titans will be suspended. We are not sure exactly how far it will be pushed back. The initial speculation is that it will only be suspended 24 or 48 hours to Monday or Tuesday. Buy or sell that the NFL will handle this correctly and that they will nip it in the bud right here and this spread will not get any worse.
It's been a really dark year. To quote Community, we're in the dark timeline. We rolled the wrong dice number. So I'm gonna buy some positivity.
Buy.
Yes, I think they can manage a single game. And it's why you don't want to rush Monday or Tuesday. And if Monday or Tuesday is the right call not being rushed, go for it. Otherwise, slip into week 18 and let the consequences be the consequences. Because what you don't need or want is this happening to multiple teams. The schedule the NFL has, we know this. We just talked about this last segment. You don't have the ability to juggle the chaos that comes with 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 teams having to be shut down. You can handle one, maybe two, but you got to nip it in the bud, and that means err on the side of caution and don't play these games until you can. And if that's the case and it's week 18, so be it.
All right, heading back to hoops. These next two are kind of connected. LeBron yesterday at the finals media day discussed the challenges of the bubble.
Probably been the most challenging thing I've ever done as far as a professional, as far as committing to something and actually, making it through. I knew what I was coming, what we were coming here for. Obviously, you didn't. I would be lying if I sat up here and knew that everything inside the bubble, the toll that it would take on your mind and your body and everything else. Because it's been extremely tough.
Buy or sell, they were underestimating the challenge of these bubbles on the athletes, and that goes for all of the leagues, NBA, NHL, and now what the MLB is planning on doing this postseason.
In a big way, and I can speak to this with a little more insight because I almost went, and I'm so glad I didn't. And I love going to the finals normally. I just didn't want to be away from my wife and kids for that long. And I have friends who are in it, right? Married, unmarried, kids, no kids. And I've talked to, Jim Jackson and I on the air and off the air have talked about it because he was there for a short time as an announcer. Just talking to guys who are around these players, it is miserable. It's miserable. I mean... For any of us that are accustomed to our loved ones and our life and our patterns, that would be hard. For athletes who are used to being able to take advantage of their success by doing whatever the hell they want, eat the dinner they want, jet off to Vegas, whatever it is, it's incredibly restrictive. I'm sure, and Paul George, I thought, bravely talked about this. For some guys, it brings out depression and exacerbates those issues. For the rest of us, it would just be miserable. I think it is a huge deal. And I think it, again, speaks to LeBron's mental toughness. And no surprise the Heat are facing him too, because whatever you say about Heat teams, they're always the most mentally tough in the game. You saw how tough that Denver team was. I think it's a really important recipe. I think LeBron's right. It's hard to quantify. It's human psychology, which is a lot less interesting than human highlight reels. But I think it's an important aspect of what's going on.
So Scottie Pippen offered a differing take on bubble ball, telling Business Insider, quote, "I'm going to be honest, it's not NBA basketball. It's not the hard grind. It's not the travel. It's not the fans. It's not the distractions. Really, to me, it's pickup basketball." Buy or sell, there is any merit to Scottie's point of view here.
It's such a terrible take.
Sell.
Can I say it's stupid? I'm not saying the man's stupid. I'm saying his perspective is dumb. And I've said dumb things too, as you know. You've been listening to the show for a month. It happens. But, I mean, come on, dude. What? Is he watching the games? the ball movement that has been a prerequisite for the teams that have advanced outside of maybe the Lakers, because a lot of iso ball for LeBron, and the level of defense. I mean, has Scotty ever been to a pickup game? I played in pickup games. You know what you don't ever have? Defense and ball movement. It's the opposite of those things. And it makes sense that it would be. You're stuck with these guys. Like, you pass up the open shooter in the corner because you want to, you know, show off. At the end of the game, you get in your expensive car here in L.A., be a Tesla probably, and you speed off to your family. In the bubble, you have to see the guy at the ping pong game in the morning. No. Pippen could be more wrong, and the misrepresentation is just a former player doing the whole, in my time, it was a better game. These young whippersnappers, they're just better than you, bro. They play a better version. Just accept it.
All right, moving on to the MLB postseason. As we've been talking about all morning, the Twins lost their 17th straight postseason game yesterday, dropping game one of their wildcard series with the Astros. The last time the Twins won a postseason game was way back in 2004 when they won game one of the ALDS against the Yankees. Since then, they have been swept four times, once by the A's and three times by those Yankees, and lost a wildcard play-in game to, again, those New York Yankees in 2017. According to Sarah Langs, this is the longest such streak in the four major North American sports. Oh. Buy or sell, the Twins will break the schneid in game two at 1 p.m. Eastern today.
Oh, my God. You're really testing my ability for positive thinking. But, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound, baby. Let's do this.
Bye.
Go Twins. Sure. Do I believe that? Yeah. But let's 17 straight games.
Can
2004.
You imagine this? 2004. Swept
I was still
four
young in 2004.
Times.
How old were you in 2004?
Swept four straight times. I was 15.
You were 15?
Yeah. I was a young man.
I was
a boy.
I was not
even
15. A young man boy who would someday become the executive producer of a show and talk about the Twins' horrific losing over that stretch. God help that team. Actually, I think they're going to lose, but I bought it. I'm optimistic. Good luck. Minnesota, I'm rooting for you.
Imagine five straight sweeps. I know, like, losing two games in a row is different than a normal sweep, but oh, my gosh.
It does bring up the question, though. What is worse heartbreak? Not more success, but more heartbreaking. Is it never winning a game over 17 postseason games? Or being the Cubs at Bartman or the Indians up 3-1 in the World Series. I almost think I'd take the Twins thing.
Not, that's tough.
The Cubs got one. But I'd almost rather be the Twins than the Indians. I don't know, because you made a World Series and that's pretty cool. But at least the Twins have literally, in the lifetime of many of their fans, never given them a single reason to hope.
Just one game. Win one game in these series. Just stop getting swept, guys. Please.
Very upfront about
it. Please win today.
We literally can't win.
All right, moving on to those Indians, Shane Bieber turned in his worst start of the season in Game 1 against the Yankees last night after leading the American League in wins, strikeouts, and ERA. The clear Cy Young favorite floundered in his first career playoff start, allowing 7 earned runs in 4 2/3 innings and taking the loss. Buy or sell, the Indians can still win 2 in a row after watching their ace get knocked around last night.
Yeah, any team
buy
with great starting pitching, the Dodgers, Tampa Bay, the Indians can win 2 in a row. It's hard, and what now you have the opportunity for what was a problem for Bieber to be the problem for the other guys. He clearly was feeling the pressure. He was overthrowing. He wasn't pitching so much as trying to hurl that baseball. You can't do that in the majors at all. You certainly can't do it against the murderer's row of a lineup that is the Yankees. You have to be composed. You have to take your time. You have to play the way you played over the course of the season. Easier said than done, because, again, every one of these games feels like two games, right? Best of three instead of a best of seven series. But yes, I think, I'm not saying they will win, but if any team can make that kind of comeback, it is a team that has great starting pitching, which includes, obviously, the Indians.
Speaking of great starting pitching, White Sox ace Lucas Giolito retired the first 18 batters of yesterday's Game 1 win against the A's before Tommy La Stella grounded a base hit up the middle to lead off the seventh inning. Remember, he threw a no-hitter on August 25th. Buy or sell, we will see a perfect game slash no-hitter go deeper than this in this postseason.
Deeper than was like five innings,
the
right?
Sixth, yeah. Six. Into the seventh. Past one out in the seventh.
Nah, there's no way.
Sell.
I mean, and the Yankees sort of, the Yankees did not support this, but for the most part, you see pitching get better in the postseason. There's more focus. There's a lot of pressure on the hitters. But that is a level of excellence I can't imagine we're going to witness again. I love it. I love pitching duels. I'm a weirdo like that. I like watching baseball, especially in the playoffs with all the pressure that are 2-1 or 1-0.
So we all saw that Patrick Mahomes 1-2-3-4 celebration the other night. Well, Brittany Matthews, who, by the way, his fiance, who is also expecting a child now, we found out yesterday, tweeted, she said, no, let them keep ranking him number four in the league. We love it. Right after he did that celebration, which people have now caught up on yesterday to realize that the 1-2-3-4 may have actually been a reference to his NFL top 100 ranking as voted on by other players before the season. So buy or sell that 1-2-3-4 celebration being a nod to his NFL top 100 ranking.
Buy.
And what, you know, further, just as if we needed, highlights this guy's ridiculous excellence. It's only his third year starting in the NFL to be offended by being number four. And yet he's totally right that it's ridiculous that he wasn't number one. It's not like they ranked him 39 and put Baker Mayfield ahead of him. I love it. I love it. The guy is, he's the most mesmerizing athlete right now in sports.
So we've talked about Adrian Peterson on this segment a couple times so far in the last month. He's averaging 4.9 yards per carry so far, outpacing Kerryon Johnson and rookie DeAndre Swift in the Lions' backfield significantly. It now appears as though the Lions plan to use Peterson as their lead back for the foreseeable future, with OC Daryl Bevel saying yesterday, quote, "I've told you this guy is a freak of nature. I don't know where that wall is or when he's going to hit it. The guy is always asking for more. Buy or sell all day, we'll rush for 1,000 yards this season."
Wow. I got to tell you, what is the opposite of the Midas touch? Is it the minus touch? Whatever it is.
I like that. I like
minus
that.
Touch? That's what Matt Patricia has. So, no, I'm going to sell anything having the Lions. The minus touch is going to come into effect. And plus, dude, the guy, I mean, we talked about the hours, the sands running through the hourglass. What am I, Joe Biden? Well, that was very nice. No, actually, let me say this. Joe Biden has an actual stutter. So for those people that are making fun of the poor guy, like, it's not a cognitive thing. It's a, and as someone who has a loved one who has a stutter, it's a terrible thing to go through. I feel bad that I made fun of Biden for that. I actually do. I rarely feel bad about those things. But to answer your question, I just think the game has caught up to Adrian Peterson. I know he's been impressive in his last stops, but that has to come to an end at some point. I think it probably does. I also root against the guy because of what happened to the son. Like, I'm not a guy that forgets that stuff. Most of us just sort of move on.
Just to hit on tennis quickly. Because you mentioned Serena being out, Victoria Azarenka was also knocked out yesterday. So buy or sell Rafa Nadal's pursuit of his 13th career win at Roland Garros and fourth consecutive one is now the most captivating thing about this tournament.
Yeah, he just beat some dude like 6-0, 6-0, 6-0.
Buy.
Yeah, Nadal's absolutely going to get it done. Him against Djokovic would be a lot of fun to watch. Man, the all-time greatness that's out there. Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Brady, Breeze, Djokovic, Federer, Nadal, I think Trout's on the list. Kershaw, if he can get a World Series. I mean, I'm missing so many people. Tiger Woods is still obviously competing. Pretty amazing. That's a show. That's it. Happy Wednesday. Have a great rest of your day. By the way, the podcast, all of you that have asked, it is up. It is over at radio.com. We'll tweet it out, CBS Sports Radio, at producer_Tom, at Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. My name is Bill Ryder. This show is Ryder Than You. And I really appreciate your listening. Have a great rest of your day. And we'll see you back here on the program on CBS Sports Radio.